Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. We just laughed our asses off right before the show talking about Popeye's delivering and how it's the little things, really. It's the little things that the entire world of the Lakers is crumbling around me, but I got my Popeyes. Unfortunately, I'm announcing this publicly, so Jen won't be thrilled to hear that. Hope she doesn't listen to this episode. How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing well, man. Yeah, you got to hide that. It's like I said before the show, it's like her bursting in the room and being like, you're eating Popeyes and you hide it real quick.
Right.
What are you doing? Oh, just watching porn.
Yeah,
porn,
I swear. Is that grease on your lips? No, I promise. It's lip balm. It's lip balm from the stripper.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. All right. Yeah, that got bad really quickly.
But anywho.
Yeah. Anyway, you know.
Well, I've enjoyed my Popeyes chicken. It has made my day. I'm a little bit better in a little bit better of a mood. So what we're going to do for this show, we are going to stick to the positives of Brandon Ingram in the first segment and a half, maybe two full segments. And then I have a hot take that we'll see what you guys think about that. I'm not even going to give it away right now, so you guys are forced to stick around to the end of to the third segment. But let's start, though, with Brandon Ingram. And I talked about it after the game last night, and I used it. I spoke about it more from a larger picture standpoint. I didn't go too far into the statistics of what he's been able to do, which we'll get to here in a second. But just as an overall larger point, with all of this talk of distractions, with all of... Pete, I just wrote an article for Silver Screen and Roll, aggregating Luke Walton saying that the playoff chase itself might be a distraction, which, let's just say I'm happy I ate my Popeyes, right? Like, let's, if you guys are freaking out about a playoff chase, how's it going to go in the actual playoffs?
Yeah, man, there's a leadership crisis here. We'll get to it later,
yeah.
but we'll
talk about that on the back end of the show. But I want to focus, though, on, like you said, like you reminded me before we started, I want to talk about Brandon Ingram. I think he's reached a level. I think there's like the uber draft prospects, right? There's Luka, there is Zion when he reaches the league, there is. I guess Ben
Anthony
Simmons.
Anthony Davis, LeBron, those type of guys.
Yeah. So he's obviously not in that category of prospect right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can make a very good case that he is in that second category. That future all-star. I'm willing to say that at some point over the course of Brandon Ingram's career, he's going to make at least one all-star game.
Yeah, that's very much possible, and I feel better about that prospect than I ever have before. He has really made some nice strides. He's compacted his shooting stroke in a way that is really encouraging to me, because I think that that's something that it's just a necessary component of if he's going to be an all-star caliber type of player. He needs to be able to shoot competently. He doesn't need to be Reggie Bullock flying off of screens and letting it go. I mean, he just needs to be able to get shots up when he's open, and he
looks confident doing it. Like right now, he looks very confident shooting that shot.
He's hopping into threes, and that helps to fight against the length that he has. When he won two steps, which is the other with the alternative to hopping into it, his legs are so long that it takes longer, more time, and so that the defender has to close out longer. The same is true with his shooting stroke, where it's just long. Everything takes a while to put together, at least previously. He's compacted both his shooting stroke up top, and he's hopping into more threes. So he's getting these shots up that were open before, taking them confidently, and they're ripping through the nets. All of us as basketball fans know that sound, like when a three is really clean, it whips through it, right? Mm-hmm. He's hit a couple of those where you can hear the technique being better. Even before, when he would make it, it would rattle in.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't make that sound. That sound is important to me, and maybe that's just old wives' tale stuff. But
the net through the rim.
Yeah.
Right? The actual splash.
Yes. Yes, and he's had a couple of those that are indicative of the shooting form changes that he's had. He's also he's becoming very special in transition, where he's able to take advantage of like one-on-two situations where he can slow down and step through the gap of the two defenders in a way that like there are maybe five guys in the league that can do that. Giannis being the most prominent. Ben Simmons is another guy that can do that at his size. But that ability, like that's the one place where I'm seeing like he's not just good, he's special at that. Yeah. And at going over the top of guys in transition and things like that. So that along with like, dude, to be doing all of this in the chaos of what's been going on, he's the rose growing through the concrete right now, and it's really beautiful to see.
I like how you made sure to point out that he's growing through concrete, because the Lakers haven't exactly made this easy on him.
Right. They haven't made it easy on anyone, man. That's part of the problem.
They definitely have not, and yet he is still thriving. And at least, look, it's a month, you know, or so of really improved play. There are things that are not sustainable as part of this really good play. The 60% shooting from 3-point range over sure. this, like that's not something you can plan on, you know. So there are aspects of this that there might be some regression or whatever. But overall, this guy, if I said it last night, Luke Walton is a coach, and the way that they have developed him from a coaching standpoint, with a really hands-off approach, that has allowed some potential bad habits that he is now breaking. He has done this while the front office that did not draft him has put him in every trade proposal and rumor that has leaked out of anywhere, right? So that can't have been easy to deal with. He's had teammates that haven't made very much sense. He's had to either carry those guys or figure out ways to be successful right now, despite having teammates that don't make sense for him, right? So he's overcome all of this and still figured out a way to thrive, at least in this stretch. And that to me, I said this last night, and I'm going to continue to say it, that to me is what makes me the most excited about what he can bring. And we saw it already. Yeah. We saw it with D'Angelo Russell, where
yeah.
he played for Byron Scott. And Byron Scott is, in my opinion, the worst coach in the history of American professional sports. And he figured out ways to be solid. Now, he had shortcomings in his game in those first couple years. The defense was a concern or whatever. And the defense kind of sort of remains a concern for Russell. But you saw that there were steps that he could take. Very clear. There was a very clear path to his success that you saw, okay, if the Lakers are really trading this guy, they're taking a huge risk, because this is what he could legitimately become one day. And I think we're reaching that same point here with Ingram, where you're saying, all right, man, he's probably going to be in trade talks again this upcoming summer, and we're probably going to go through all of this noise all over again. But if you're going to trade him, you better get something legit back and not have to attach him to a whole bunch to do that, because he might be that kind of it might just be a recreation of what we've seen with D'Angelo Russell.
I think we as fans tend to overlook the how much the environment that a player lands in impacts how yeah. they develop. I remember in the 2017 draft, a friend of mine who works in the NBA and was a big Josh Jackson guy. And the moment he got drafted by the Phoenix Suns, that guy who was a big believer in Josh Jackson's talent mm-hmm. was like, that kid has no chance there.
None.
Because he understood the environment that Jackson was being drafted into, some of Jackson's weaknesses in terms of immaturity and things like that, mm-hmm. that guy landing there is not the same thing as that guy landing in San Antonio or right. other places. And one of the most disheartening things about the last few years, and we see this with guys like Russell and Julius Randle thriving elsewhere, is that what this Lakers organization should be doing is putting them in every position to succeed. And there's all sorts of ways of doing that, of getting the best player development coaches, of not creating a hostile environment toward them. And mm-hmm. we could have a whole episode on just that. Right. Yeah. But,
and we will maybe in the off season, sure, somebody sure. asked us to.
Yeah. The environment that's created for these guys is really difficult to thrive in. And that, like, Brandon Ingram has really gained my respect this year. Like, I respected him before. I've always been concerned about elements of his game, but they've always been technical. It's never been a problem with his, like, mentality. I thought his mentality is, and I still do, is misdirected sometimes toward, like, I'm going to be the mid-range king type of guy.
Yeah.
And I think that he could be more efficient with how he uses it. But I respect how Brandon Ingram plays more than anybody else on the team. His errors and mistakes are almost always the result of commission rather than omission.
Yeah.
Where
trying to do too much, or
right, he made the wrong play. He drove into a single gap when you should only drive into double gaps. But these are all things that you can learn. I very rarely watch Brandon Ingram and am like, this dude doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's like the starting point for being able to respect what a player brings to the table. Kuzma is second, but Kuzma has more lapses than Ingram does. And with all of the turmoil that's with the Lakers right now, those are the guys that I'm enjoying the most. Like, Reggie Bullock plays hard on every play, mm-hmm. and he doesn't make the right play all the time. But, like, I just want to respect the way that this team plays. And Brandon Ingram is the guy that I respect most at this point.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. We're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, we've talked about some of the things that he's been doing offensively. And again, there's context statistically that we can point to. But I also want to talk about what he's been able to do defensively while also producing on the offensive end. That's insane to me. That's incredible to me. So we're going to get to that here in a second. So we saw it, I think, we've seen countless examples of this, right, where a player focuses on the defensive side of the ball and their offense takes a little while to catch up, right? Or they focus solely on the offensive side of the ball and their defense slips, right? That Ingram right now has been able to step up offensively the way that he has and improve his efficiency, his decision-making, his aggressiveness. He's been consistently aggressive on the offensive side. And then he's also getting back on the other side of the ball, and he's still working his ass off there too.
Yeah.
And being very impactful on that side too. It's really rare, and it's reached a point where I kind of just roll my eyes when you hear people talk about two-way players, right? And
right.
He's the best two-way player. They should all be two-way players, right? They should, but they aren't.
And there are no DHs in the NBA, right?
Well, LeBron's trying,
man.
but Ingram, though, Ingram is legitimately becoming a two-way player. And again, it just gets back to the fact that he's been able to sprout up the way that he has with all of some of the worst soil in the NBA to try to deal with. It's just incredible to me. Have you noticed the same kind of things defensively? Because like he had that play against Avery Bradley where he slipped and Bradley stepped back or whatever, which people are going to laugh at. But for the most part, I don't know. You tell me if this is too hot a take. I think he's been the Lakers' best player since the All-Star break.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Defensively, I think he was better like 10, 15 games ago than he has been over this stretch where he's been better on offense. He's also, that's a natural function to me of taking on an increased offensive mm-hmm. load. You're going to take a small step back. I'm working on a video on him right now. And that's one thing that I've noticed is that his defense isn't quite as good as it had been before then, but it's still good. And he's still playing hard, right?
And I think he relies heavily on Lonzo out there too. Like, if he's the only Laker who's actually trying defensively, then I don't know what you would expect from him. But go ahead.
If you've got Lonzo out there, it allows Brandon to be what he is naturally as a defender, which is a wing defender. Mm-hmm. He's done an admirable job on guards and smaller players this year, but he's got a couple of footwork things that exacerbate his length, similar to what's true on his jump shot mm-hmm. on the offensive end, where when he has to come off of a screen, he can really struggle with that, and guys gain a lot of separation from him on that. But when he's on the ball, he's been fantastic, and he's been one thing that's been undersold is, you know, over the last 10 games, he's averaging 5.5 rebounds a game, which is much more in the area of where he should be all season. Like, they need a guy to be doing that. He's got center type length mm-hmm. when he drops down and crashes on the boards. So he's been better in that respect. But he's been like I said, he's the guy that I respect the most in terms of how he plays, in part because he's giving his effort and his mistakes. So, for example, and I'll show this on film when I do the video, when he has to recover to a guy, his first step is always back. He likes to power off of his right foot. So if his feet are together, he's going to step back with his right foot to push off, when ideally you want to push off going forward, right? Mm-hmm. That false step in the NBA gives a guy a little bit of extra space. He can close that space to a degree with his length, but that's just a technique thing. That's not something where he's not trying. He's just doing it slightly wrong. Mm-hmm. And so That can get fixed, just like we're seeing some of the technique stuff with his jumper being, if not fixed, we're seeing encouraging signs.
Yeah, progress.
Right.
I also want to, I had a point about Ingram. This is the last point I want to make on this, and you can build on it if you want or laugh at it. I found it really funny. I asked you for a clip of LeBron not going at Jahlil Okafor in space, right, against in that New Orleans game. And I thought it was perfectly fitting for everything that's been going on over the last week or so, that the point of the clip is to show here's where LeBron is falling short. But on the peripheries of the clip,
sure,
it's bookended by Ingram scoring in transition and then knocking down a three-pointer after LeBron wasn't able to challenge Jahlil Okafor. I just thought, if you were to summarize everything that's kind of sort of going on right now with the Lakers, both positive and negative, I think that clip just perfectly summarized it. It was astounding once it kind of clicked. It was just, wow, that's perfect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Brandon's done a fantastic job of... he's making transitions slow, and I don't know if I can articulate this without accompanying video, but that he hit a little fadeaway going to his left. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like fading to the side on that. He's become really good at that shot where he's drifting to his left and uh-huh. shoots it, you know, as a righty. That's a, you know, Lou Williams-ish type shot and a much bigger guy.
Just wait till he starts getting calls on that too, by the way.
Right.
Because he was forced with contact to have to take that shot.
Well, and part of it too, like, you remember the drive... so Rondo hit that game winner against the Celtics. It was preceded by an Ingram drive on Horford, and he got a step on Horford, but it got blocked. And I think it was a goaltending on Horford, but they didn't call it right. But Brandon got a step on him, and the right thing to do in that moment was for him to cut in front of Horford to take away his angle. But Brandon stayed on the path that he was going down. Point being is that when Brandon learns the technique stuff and his body fills out a little bit,
yeah.
a play like that Horford play, rather than being a reverse layup that's missed on the other side, it's going to be an and one on the strong side because he cut in front of Horford, got the bump, and finished. So like you're saying, like, wait till he gets the whistles. Part of that's going to be him learning technique from that. But the encouraging part of that is that there's still, like, the glass isn't full yet,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And there's still progress to be made in those ways.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think he should be in that kind of second tier, not fully elite status as an NBA prospect. I think there are still holes. I'd like for him to show over longer than a month or so that he can take 3 to 5 3-pointers a game and knock those down on a consistent basis. But for right now, there's building blocks, there's a path, and he has succeeded despite so much other bullshit that's been going on over the course of this point to his career, that it makes me think that, yeah, eventually this kid's probably going to get it. He's probably going to figure this out. All right, that's two segments of positivity. The third segment here is, it'll sound a lot more negative than I actually think it's going to be.
Can I ask you a question real quick before we go to break? Do you save the more positive shows for when I'm on?
No. I guess you're better at pointing out positives than I am.
Okay, fair enough. Because I'll be on Twitter and be like, Anthony said this and this and that and this pod, and then the next day you're like, so Pete.
I mean, I could tell everybody to hump a rainbow on this episode too if you want, but
that would be fantastic, man. This is when your analogies are at their best. That's very concise for your analogy though, but it was really struck a note right there.
Jen was like, you told everybody to do what? What does that even mean? Jen, don't worry about it. I recorded at 1:30 in the morning. It was late. I was tired. I was annoyed. Anywho, when we come back, we are going to talk about my crazy hot take. That we'll see how you guys feel about that. All right, are you ready, Pete?
Yes.
I think that if the Lakers want a chance at making the playoffs, they have to fire Luke Walton. I think their chances already right now, or they're up against it, obviously. I think their chances are already slim. But if they want any chance at all at it, I think they gotta say goodbye to Luke.
And I agree. And that is not to be confused with blaming everything on Luke.
Right. Thank you. Far. Good point.
This is a, like, we can all see this, right? Like, this is a toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't breaking news to anybody. And in order to create a toxic environment like this.
And again, this isn't Luke creating the toxic environment.
Yes. Yes. Many people have to contribute to that. And Luke Walton is far from blameless. Right. And no, and I do not want to sound like a Luke Walton apologist at all. I think he's implemented a very poor offensive system. I think that his after the game, I thought we came together and played really hard tonight after losing to the friggin' Memphis Grizzlies. Like, no, man, there's a lack of intensity there. Mm-hmm. That's not the first time he said something like that. Yeah. I'm fine with him being let go on merit. There is a strong argument to be made that Luke Walton deserves to get fired. Him being fired does not mean, and things getting better as a result of it, does not mean that he was the only problem. That's right. All I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Things need to be shaken up. Things need to change on a fundamental level for the Lakers to go on a playoff. Like, they're still only three games out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Had they won these last two games, we'd be like, hey, we're right there knocking on the door. And they should have won these last two games against two teams that they should have beaten. But it's just the well is so poisoned right now that it can't happen unless something like that happens. And that's the only thing I can think of that's big enough to, like, rattle the core enough to be able to change things at this point.
So it's a couple things. The rotation to me, I don't get. I don't understand what he's doing out there.
What, can I just play devil's advocate? I mostly agree with you. The Lakers have, like, a bunch of dudes that are completely unreliable right now. Mm-hmm. Rondo's awful. KCP's awful. Lance is Lance. I feel like Lance tries. I can depend on him on that. Tyson Chandler is looking very washed up. You can make strong argument that Luke doesn't have enough bodies to construct a viable rotation. I would like Wagner to get more minutes, but what's your thought on that? Like, can Luke put together a decent rotation at this point?
I don't think he. So, I think if you were to say, like, 10 out of 10, the best rotation, like, the Nuggets to me have the best rotation across the NBA, right?
Okay.
Where at any given moment they have a legitimate NBA lineup out there, no matter who is playing, basically. If that's a 10 out of 10, the best that the Lakers can muster right now is like a 6.5, I would say.
Okay.
I think Luke is screwed. It actually perfectly encapsulates what's been going on this season, is that Luke is screwed. There's the first statement, but he he also isn't doing enough to make that situation better for himself. So, like, those lineups where, like, they, Rondo and Lance can't be out there at the same time. They can't. Yes. That cannot happen. If you're going to have Tyson Chandler out there, then you have to find a way to get him more defensive help so that his washedness isn't so obvious, right?
Yeah.
There are things that while he's behind the eight ball, he still isn't figuring those things out. Would you roll with that?
No, I think that's a very accurate way of and fair to him. Like, it's so easily we can go to the place where, like, just because the surrounding environment isn't good, you're absolved of any blame for it. And I think that you hit exactly the right note with that in terms of what, you know, that Luke's not maximizing that. You brought up Denver as being an example. I don't watch Denver enough, and you would be able to answer this, especially with, you know, with Adam and all that. I would venture a guess that most of those guys in that Denver rotation know when they're going to play, roughly. Like, it's the same rotation, roughly, every night. And I think for the Lakers, like, you know, they're having games where they're playing 17, 18 different lineups on a regular basis. And lineups will play like 30 seconds at a time, and then another sub will come in.
Right.
So there's no continuity, right? And that lack of continuity, everybody's healthy with the exception of Lonzo right now. And Luke is searching because they're playing poorly, but he's never really had a great deal of lineup continuity at any point, really. And I think that that's a fair criticism of him.
Yeah. And now that's not me saying that his rotations are why I want him fired. It's not even that I necessarily want him fired. I legitimately feel bad for the guy.
Me too.
He's in a really tough spot. The Lakers have completely hung him out to dry here. Everybody knows. Like, if you were to poll every single person who has a single iota of understanding of what direction the Lakers are going in right now, you poll, say, 100 people, right? Mm-hmm. Would a single person say there's a chance that he comes back next year?
I have a friend who actually has bet that Luke Walton will be the coach of the Lakers at the end of next season.
Wow.
And yeah, and all of the other
really believes
in it's from a message board that I post on, and everyone else is like, let me get on in on this action. You know, like he's the only person I've heard that, you know, that is of that opinion. So yeah, I think it's, you know, 99.9% of people. It's just, yeah, it's an untenable situation.
Yeah. And it's tough because, so you look at the veterans. And again, I think a lot of this is everybody walks to the beat of LeBron's drum. And we've had those reports that LeBron's camp is unhappy with LeBron, but LeBron reportedly isn't.
You mean with Luke? You mean with Luke?
Luke, yeah. So everybody walks to the beat of LeBron's drum. And if he isn't fully bought in, then Luke is done. Like it's almost a non-starter.
Go ahead.
Well, sorry. And then you combine that with. Again, the poorly kept secret that I don't think Luke is coming back next year, and you combine that with this poor rotation that Luke is given and has to try to make work, and it's just, like you said, it's not even that I think Brian Shaw, who I think would probably take over as interim, is worlds better. It's just that he would have the opportunity to be different.
Yeah,
and you know, different always isn't always better. But I would think in this situation, I think just merely being different, being a different voice, not being Luke Walton, not being hung out to dry here, would make for a better situation.
And that doesn't have to be permanent, right? That doesn't have to mean next season or the season beyond right?
I would hope that they would open up a candidate search.
Yes, please. No, I certainly agree with that. And, you know, to me, Luke never stood a chance, and he hasn't done himself many favors within this, but like, it's time to and I almost wonder if some of the effort stuff, like one thing that I think has gone under discussed in our Lakers sphere is we keep going back to the trade deadline as a place where all this drama created this awful environment. Remember, they all stepped to Luke in Golden State, which is before those rumors started breaking, a game or two before that. And the veterans were the ones who did it. Mm-hmm. And who are the people who are playing like absolute dog crap right now? It ain't the kids, with the exception of Josh Hart, right? It's the vets. So it's easy to go back to the trade deadline is ground zero for this, but it hasn't been that. And there are other issues that are permeating throughout the team.
Right. I would say, like, if you're to use the pushing a car off of a cliff analogy, they nudged it a little bit that night in Golden State. And once the car got rolling, the angle of the hill got steeper and steeper and steeper. And then the trade deadline happened, and the hill ended, the cliff ended, and the car is now off of the mountain. And you know, I just think they just need some kind of shakeup here. And it's unfortunate that they got to this point. It again goes back to the situations, to bring this full circle, the situations that they keep putting their young assets in, right? It's the fact that every young promising asset or player, or in this case coach, comes into their organization, they are expected to succeed despite the Lakers' best efforts to make it so that they cannot. You know,
there is a lot of preventable BS that comes with being the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And what that does is, like, so, like, one guy, Kenny Atkinson, before he got the Brooklyn job, he was considered one of the prime coaching candidates around the league the year that he got hired, and that was the same year that Luke got hired, right? Atkinson is arguably the most respected player development guy in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And with a team that had a bunch of number two pick, you know, a bunch of young guys and draft picks, that would have been a wonderful hire from a basketball standpoint. The type of guy like him is never considered for this job, and partially because he's never been a Laker, but also because
it's not sexy.
That's part of it. And there are questions that come, and there are complications that come along with being a Lakers coach that don't come along with being a Brooklyn coach. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, you know, we look around the league of who might replace Luke Walton. The list of guys that they would realistically hire is small because of the environment that they created with all of, like, can you deal with this BS? Do you have the gravitas to be able to do that? Is a rookie assistant coach going to be able to do that and be able to coach LeBron? Come on, man. Like, that's just not how real life works. They might be great. And that's part of the problem with the Lakers is that we allow that to manifest and we allow that to get in so that we shrink the pool of people that are possibly available, that we never hire a Kenny Atkinson type of guy because we can't in this environment.
Yeah. That is a point that I think we need to come back to maybe at a day where we can do some wandering around organizationally. Some of the way that, so somebody asked on iTunes, what's the ideal way for an organization to work? Now, neither you or I have experience where we can say this is how it should work, right? This is if it doesn't work this way, then your organization is screwed. That's not what we would say, but there are things that you can identify around the league that other teams do well that can be pulled in. And because the Lakers are so insulated in terms of their thinking, that probably doesn't happen as nearly as often as it does or as it should.
The one element that I feel comfortable speaking on, because you're right, I do not have that experience, is with the organizations I've been a part of. And this is true, I feel like, of Lakers Twitter. We talk about a lot about how we root for each other and we help each other. Like, we could be rivals, right? Yeah. And instead we choose to work together. And I think we're all better as a result. And the lesson from that and from my other organizational experiences, even though this is kind of a loose affiliation, Lakers Twitter, right? But everybody has to be on the same page and everybody has to be rowing in the same direction. Mm-hmm. You made the Lonzo analogy, right, about the old warships where you have the guy beating the drum, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they did that so that everybody could be rowing in the same direction at the same time in sync, and that synchronicity leads to a more powerful result for the collective.
Yeah.
And when you've got, like, is Luke Walton on the same page as Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka?
Yeah.
No. Is Jeannie Buss on the same page as them? I would say that Jeannie is more away from the situation than necessarily on the same page. And I don't think that's too good. I would like Jeannie to be more involved than she is. I think she's too far in the hands-off approach. And so that, and now the ways to go about that, again, that's a whole different show. Yeah. And that's, we're not the people to be answering that. I have my ideas, but who knows if they're true or not. Mm-hmm. But the Lakers will not be a healthy franchise until they all start rowing in the same direction.
Yeah. I completely agree. And again, it just comes down to you got to ask yourself what your goal is for the Lakers right now, right? What's your hope? Can they make the playoffs? And unfortunately, because to continue your analogy of all these guys rowing in the same direction or to the same rhythm or whatever, I just don't think with the way things are currently situated that the Lakers are able to get past that difference in rhythm or difference in direction to make it to the playoffs as a collective unit. So, you know, it sucks, man. It sucks. Because
it really does.
I do think that, you know, maybe eventually someday Luke Walton might look at some of the things that the mistakes that he made and make for a pretty a decent head coach, or at the very least will join up with some organization and be a valuable piece as an assistant coach. Right. We've already seen him do that. And you know, a move that is made just to make sure that the Lakers get into the playoffs is one that can be deemed as somewhat short-sighted, but is still necessary. Something can be at the same time both short-sighted and necessary. Yeah. And I think that's where we kind of find the Lakers right now.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I will be writing solo for tomorrow's show after the Lakers play the New Orleans Hornets. Nope. Yeah. Pelicans. It's been a long year.
You're flustered too, man. See, you're not rowing in the same direction as you used to be, Anthony.
It's the Popeyes. I ate too much carbs for lunch. I had Popeyes chicken, the fried chicken. I had Cajun fries and I had mashed potatoes. And it's nap time, man. It's Jen, don't listen. I had a salad. I had milk and water to drink. Definitely not strawberry Fanta. It was a nice wholesome food, a nice wholesome salad for lunch. It was, and apparently I watch a lot of porn. That'll do it for this episode though. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's and I'll talk to you mañana.